Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to the end of this first week of the new year. If you have been listening to the show this week, we have been talking about a New Year's resolution that I'm challenging you all to take with me. Now, we had a lot of talk about New Year's resolutions. Some people love them, some people hate them, but I have one for everyone in every stage of parenting. I am just asking you to intentionally invest in your parenting journey. That's it. Just make that your New Year's resolution. All you have to do is just listen into the program, and over the next year, over the next 52 weeks, we will be debuting each week a new habit for healthy parenting. And by the end of this next year, in the first week of January in 2025, you will be able to look back and see all of those things that you have done to intentionally invest in your parenting journey. I think God's grace is so amazing, and He just asks for faith the size of a mustard seed. So we don't have to give very much, and He blesses that and makes it really, really grow. So I'm challenging you to do that. This week's habit is prayer. And so we've talked about that all this week, and I've challenged you to have a prayer journal. I am doing that. I'm asking my producer, Stephanie, to hold me accountable. We've already had a lot of prayer time this week, and we've talked about different ways to integrate prayer into your daily life as a parent. So I hope that you will continue to do that. Now, as we're looking at the month of January, you may or may not know that it is actually National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And that is what I'm going to talk to you about today. Now, this is obviously a very difficult topic. It is traumatic and troubling, but I promise you to be gentle with you as we walk along and understand this threat that is encompassing our nation today. But it might be a good time to put away little ears to make sure that your listening audience is adjusted and appropriate, as I'm going to give you some hard stories and some hard facts, but ones that are very necessary in adjusting your perspective as a parent and knowing what to look for and what to do. So with that, I am just going to jump in. Now, if you've been listening to the show for any number of time, or if you followed my work for over the last decade, you will know that actually human trafficking is my main area of advocacy, research, and scholarship as a nurse, as a professor, as a nurse scholar. And those two words, human trafficking, are two words that really strike fear in the heart of every parent. I'm sure that you, like me, have seen a post or heard a conversation or heard something in your community that goes like this. And maybe it usually happens on social media is what I see. And somebody will say, I don't usually post about this, but I was almost abducted in the grocery store tonight by traffickers. And then they will share a really scary story about usually men who are following them around and how they have suspicious behaviors and how the people involved feel very frightened and they get away and they tell you, be aware of human trafficking. Well, the truth is that although I'm sure those experiences were real, I'm sure those experiences were frightening, they are far from the norm and the reality of everyday human trafficking and what that usually looks like. Now, for us as parents, we want that to be the norm because, let's be honest, we feel like we have more control over that. We can protect our kids from scary strangers. We know what they look like. We know how to identify them. We know how to engage law enforcement or to recognize them and to do things and take action for our safety. But the way that it really looks is much scarier and much harder to protect. And so our kids, and so what we do is we put up this protection and this barrier in our mind, thinking This is how it happens because I want to feel in control of that. Now listen, I have been there, and about 10 years ago, I was practicing as a pediatric nurse practitioner in the area. I'm a mom of four. I was leading in our national organization, and I was a professor in pediatrics. So I really felt like I had my finger on the pulse of what was going on with kids and the threats that they were encountering. But I did not know what human trafficking was. I really didn't. And one of my friends who runs an anti-trafficking advocacy organization in the area, she called me and she asked me, would you help me write continuing education for nurses about human trafficking? And I said, absolutely. Not. No, that's not how this works. I don't know anything about trafficking. And she said, Jessica, our organization is serving victims in the area, in Houston, in your hometown. And most of them have encountered healthcare providers and they have not been recognized or offered any intervention at all. And that got my attention. And I said, you know, okay, she was persistent. And I thought, all right, I don't know about trafficking, but I do know about educating nurses. So give me the content. I'll walk you through the process and maybe you'll stop calling, honestly, is what I thought. And as I started to learn, I realized that my ignorance of what trafficking was really harmful. And I called her back. Her name is Carrie Taylor, and she actually is going to be on the program this month, so you'll want to listen to her side of the story. But I called her and I had to apologize. And I said, listen, Carrie, I've been asking you the wrong question. I've been asking, how can I help you? But really the question that I needed to ask is, how can I not help you? How can I not help you now knowing what I know? And it really changed my life. Now, since then, I've found myself on radio and television, newspapers. I've testified in the state legislature. I've written house bills. I have worked with the Department of U.S. Health and Human Services to create core competencies for trafficking. And in honor of that work, honestly, over the last year, I'm a little embarrassed to say it, but the truth is that I've been named Texas Nurse Practitioner of the Year, Advocate of the Year by the American Nurses Association, Humanitarian of the Year by the National League for Nursing. I could go on and on. I have a wall full of awards in my office, but does that give me a sense of pride or satisfaction? Honestly, not even a little bit. And why? Because parents still don't believe their kids are at risk for trafficking. Parents still don't want to talk about it. And kids are still being trafficked. And that is not okay with me. Now, The Sound of Freedom is a movie that is sweeping the country and it is being talked about everywhere I go. People are asking me about this movie. It is a gripping and horrifying glimpse into the world of trafficking. And it's said to be, if you are not familiar with it, I'll give you a little recap. It's said to be based on a true story, although the clandestine nature of the work really precludes any possibility of verification. You can't verify that. And it follows kids who are abducted in South America and then are rescued. Now, have I seen cases like that? Parents tricked, children kidnapped and exploited in a foreign country? I absolutely have. I have seen that happen with my own eyes. But it is far from the norm, and I really worry about false assurances that parents will take from the film, because kidnapping is the least likely way to be recruited into trafficking. Parents, we should be far more terrified of the thousands of strangers that are invited into our children's bedrooms every night through social media than we should be afraid of a trafficker snatching our child off the street. Now, people who are in trafficking experience immense grooming and they have trauma bonding to their trafficker. And so a lot of times what we perceive even as a rescue, they may not see as a rescue and they may not see as a happy ending. And the lifelong effects of trauma are inevitable. So like I told you, when we see something awful, we distance ourselves and we say, oh, I would never do that. Oh, I wouldn't fall for that. Oh, I wouldn't have let my kids go with that modeling agency. I wouldn't have let my kids there by themselves. And watching the movie Sound of Freedom will make you think how awful. But thank God they were saved, and thank God that is not going to happen to me or my kids. So if your heart is moved by the movie, move your mind and your feet to know and to act to protect your family. Now, I'll give you a real life example of a case that I'm following in the media. Now, this isn't one I have been personally involved with, but I have been watching. You may have recalled a recent case where there was a girl and her father who attended a Dallas Mavericks basketball game. And the girl went up to go to the bathroom during the halftime, and she didn't come back. Her dad alerted the authorities, and she had had a history of running away once before. And so it seems like this case was treated like a runaway case. And they weren't getting very far with authorities, and they turned to an anti-trafficking organization who helped them identify their daughter who was being sold in Oklahoma. And they were able to recover her and to bring her back. But just this week in the news, it was reported that the grand jury did not indict her abductor. And what I think from reading the news, this is just my analysis here, is looking and seeing that people don't understand what trafficking was. And their perception was that this was a girl who, this was not a stranger to her. She had had some interaction with him online before and had made this plan, it seems, to go with the trafficker, which is often what happens. And so what we know about the definition of trafficking is that children, minors, cannot consent to commercial sexual exploitation. They, even if they say they're consenting, they are not capable of consent. And so that is just one example of why I think that we need to have increased awareness of what this is, what this looks like, and how this is going on in our community. Now, a lot of people are asking me, before I go on and tell you all of the specifics about trafficking and what you should be afraid of and what you can do, what you cannot be afraid of, I do want to address some questions that I'm getting. This is Friday, and I always have Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and most of the questions that I'm getting this week are about this movie Sound of Freedom again. And should I watch it? Should I see it? This is one of the questions that I'm getting. Now, again, you know, I have been eye to eye and heart to heart with victims and survivors, and I know that this is a tough movie to watch. So let me give you a few more details here. So this movie, it follows the story of Tim Ballard. He's a Homeland Security agent who sets out to rescue two children from Honduras. They're given unknowingly by their father into sex slave trade in Colombia. Now, there are two things that you need to know before you decide if this movie is right for you to watch. First, it is gritty. It is extremely difficult to watch. Obviously, child sexual abuse is on full display extensively throughout, and many people have told me that they felt physically sick or they were weeping in the first few minutes of the film. So here's the thing, this movie is not an exaggeration of the horrors that are faced by children and trafficking. It actually only scratches the surface of that darkness that I have seen personally. It shocks our senses, and it is deeply troubling, and that can move us to action. But I just want to say clearly, it may not be for everyone. There are ways to learn about trafficking that are equally effective, but less traumatic. The second thing that I want you to know is that while this movie portrays a series of events that's absolutely plausible and no doubt accurately reflective of some people's real life experiences, you're again going to watch this movie and feel this kind of sense of relief that this is not going to happen to you. And in reality, among the thousands of children, thousands of reports of trafficking that I've seen here in the U.S. and dozens, if not hundreds, of victims, by far and away, most are groomed into a trafficking relationship by someone they know or someone they think they know. They think they know this person as a benefactor, as a champion, as a coach. They think they know this person. They don't recognize the nefarious intent. And so that is something that's really important to realize. And so it may not be for you to see, and that's okay. That is completely fine. There are other ways that you can help, other ways that you can respond to the risk of trafficking. And when we come back, I'm going to answer the question, should I let my teen see this movie? And I'll give you some specific ways that your family can help, plus answering some of the most common questions I'm getting about what is trafficking really? How does it happen? And what should I look for? And how can I keep my kids safe? Don't go away. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back in this first week of the new year. Before the break, we were having a pretty serious conversation. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and this is my primary body of work as a nurse scholar, and I will be sharing some things with you throughout the month and having some guests to raise your awareness and really encourage and equip you to make sure that your kids are safe from this really, really terrible tragedy. So now is a good time to make sure that your listening audience is adjusted. We are talking about some tough things, and they are not appropriate for little ears. So it may be just a good time to put in your earbuds or to bookmark this program for later, or to go to another room. So now that you've had time to do that, we're going back, and I was answering, should you stream the movie Sound of Freedom? Now, again, I said, it depends. And I honestly, my heart is a little bit heavy because I have talked to a lot of people who almost feel guilty for not watching the movie. And especially if you have experienced past trauma or past abuse yourself, I want you to be kind to yourself and not feel guilty about that at all, because there are other ways that you can be involved. And I will give you some of those in just a little bit. The other common question I'm getting is, should I let my teenager see this movie? Of course, we know the movie is about sex trafficking. That is a very dark and difficult topic. And a lot of parents are thinking, I really don't want my kid to know about this, or I don't want to talk to my kid about these kinds of things. And then I have parents who say, my kid absolutely needs to know about this. And so here's what I would tell you if you're deciding whether or not you should stream this for your teen or let your teen watch it. It really depends. Of course, it always depends. Now, human trafficking, of course, is a really real threat. We cannot bury our heads in the sand and just pretend that this kind of evil doesn't exist. But as parents, we really need to intentionally lead this conversation in a developmentally appropriate way that positions us as the expert. I've had Hillary Morgan Ferrer from Mama Bear Apologetics on the show, and we agreed on this, that hard things should come from parents first. It should come from a place of trust, a place of safety. And you don't have to give your kids every nitty-gritty detail of something for them to fully understand or appreciate the threat. Every kid is a little bit different. And so for some kids, this movie might be an effective tool for conversation. And for other kids, it might not be. You know your teen best. So I would say do your homework on reading the movie reviews and trust your gut. If you decide to go, though, make a plan. Don't just treat this movie like casual entertainment, like you would just put on a comedy movie or a sitcom or something like that. You need to prep your teen in advance if they're going to stream it. And if they've already streamed it and you haven't done that and you're starting to feel panicky, please don't do that. Know that you can talk to them afterwards too. There is nothing wrong with that at all. But if they haven't yet streamed it, explain the premise of what they will see. Prepare them for that. Allow them to research some of the reviews and ask questions beforehand. And give them a free pass to leave or turn it off at any time without asking permission or without making apologies, because they may tell you, okay, I can handle it. But then they find something in themselves that is disturbed, or that they can't process what they're seeing fast enough as it's happening on the screen, because this is really fast paced. And so I would give them a pass to stop it and not even have to make an excuse, and have some intentional follow-up conversation. Here you go, parents, with these four questions. Ask them, How do you feel about what you saw? How do you think this impacts you or your friends? What support do you need to feel safe from this? And what do you think we can do as a family to fight trafficking? And then if you want more education, then be sure as a family to seek credible education. There is a lot of education out there that is really well-intentioned, but perhaps not as informed. And so make sure that it's just a source that you trust. And it's okay. So whether you see the movie or not, you can fight trafficking as a family. And there are three things that you can do. Now, because again, if you see this movie, it's going to make you angry and you're going to feel compelled to do something. So the first thing is getting informed. This movie is a jumping off place. It's a call to action. It's a compelling emotional experience, but it would be a mistake to use it as credible education. You can't watch this movie and say, oh, I watched The Sound of Freedom. I know about trafficking. That is not an equivalent. And the best education should have these characteristics. These are things that you're looking for that say this is credible, high quality education. You're looking for programs that do not use graphic photos or other disturbing visual images depicting abuse. So if you find yourself in an education section and they're showing you terrible photos, though, what we know from research is those really are not necessary for you to be fully informed about trafficking. So that would be something that's concerning about. The other thing that we need to know that is a common misconception is that trafficking encompasses sex trafficking and labor trafficking, and good education is going to teach you about those different kinds of trafficking, because actually labor trafficking is more prevalent, more difficult to pick up on. It is less reported, but it is happening. So that is something that you're looking for. So look for credible education in your community. Most, you can find it online. And when I have Carrie Taylor next week, or you can listen to when she was on the program before, she has an organization called Unbound Now Houston, and they do provide education online. We'll post this later with the show notes, but you can just go to unboundnow.org and click on that tab that says education or learn, and you'll be able to take some free online training for parents if that's something that you want to do. That's credible education that I recommend. The second thing that you can do is actually ask your child's school, if they are attending a school, whether private school or public school, if they have a policy, a protocol, or a program for trafficking. So the U.S. federal government actually just released a new toolkit for schools to equip schools to be able to respond to trafficking, because we know that contrary to popular myths that children are usually not kidnapped and taken away, but they are trafficked and exploited while they're going to school. Now, just over the last year, I've worked with a group of graduate students in the state of Oklahoma. We worked implementing a protocol in a school, the one that I've just told you about. And when we were working in that school district that served about 10,000 kids, we were looking for a survivor, because that's another hallmark of good education, is that it's survivor informed, that they have survivors, people who have lived experience of trafficking, who are providing consultation and wisdom along the way, and they're participating in the process. And we were looking for a survivor to work with us. And actually what happened is a girl who had attended that school district stepped out. She had just turned 18, and she disclosed her trafficking experience that occurred while she was in that school district from the ages of 11 to 14. Now, her mom is actually a nurse. Her dad works in the school, and they had no idea this was going on. She was trafficked by one of her peers' mothers. So what would happen would be she'd go to this friend's house, presumably for a play date, but then they would engage in trafficking her to men out of the house and women, actually, which was really horrifying. And so she has since come forward as a survivor and is just a really powerful advocate. But that's something that happened there. And since we implemented that protocol, just in the last 2 to 3 months, they've already identified children who are either at risk for trafficking or who have been trafficked. So that is another thing that you can do, is look for that federal school protocol kit, the toolkit, and ask your kids' school, are you ready for this? Are you looking for this? Are you engaged with this? The third thing that you can do is volunteer your time or your money or your services to a local organization. So a lot of times, you know, families think, well, what can I do in a local organization? Well, there are many who take donations of clothes or hygiene products, because a lot of times if we remove someone from a trafficking situation, they don't have basic toiletries or a change of clothes. And so I've had children here in the community helping to organize clothing drives that they donate to them. Many are looking for mentors. Many have fundraising events that need volunteers. There is Unbound that I work with has a 5K, and there are kids that come out and help with the 5K, or they may need help with office tasks. So if your heart is moved by this issue and this conversation that is surrounding human trafficking, I just challenge you to let it move your hands and your feet to action, because you never know when what you choose to do today could literally save a life tomorrow. Now, one of the things that I am worried about as we are looking at human trafficking is, again, kids getting lost in the shuffle. So as we were moving into COVID-19, I was really seeing a lot of momentum in education and engagement, but from lawmakers and from other organizations and industries that really want to fight trafficking. And what we're seeing drive a lot of that is actually lawsuits. People are starting to sue other industries to hold them accountable. So for example, suing a hotel saying you should have prepared your employees, there were red flags everywhere for trafficking, or airline industries or transportation industries. Those of you out there listening may have been required to have some sort of education regarding human trafficking. And just recently, we're seeing a case against Boston Children's Hospital that is being sued by a survivor of labor trafficking. Now, this is a common scenario for labor trafficking. Nannies or childcare workers who are recruited from other countries and promised a good job and a placement, and they really don't know the legal system here. But once they get here, their papers are taken and their living conditions are terrible, and they're usually subjected to multiple forms of abuse. And this woman was caring for a child who had chronic illness for a wealthy family, and she frequently encountered the children's hospital and is now saying this should have been recognized. And this is something that I'm seeing all over. And so we just, as a community, need to come together and recognize these things that can happen. And as we went into COVID-19, then all of the healthcare resources were really taken hostage. And we were only paying attention to COVID-19 and not paying attention to trafficking. So what we think happened during that was that exploitation went up while reporting went down. And when we saw the onset of the pandemic, we're talking about 1.5 billion children around the world isolated in their homes with only digital devices for companionship and connection. And traffickers are really moving from the street to the smartphone to seek opportunity to exploit children. Now, let me give you an example of this. In the first month of the COVID-19 shutdown, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children reported a 3-fold increase in reports of online exploitation and abuse. That went from 300,000 reports to more than 1.1 million. Now, 70% of those reports came from social media messaging. That is where people are seeking children. It is not a quote-unquote safe situation to have a child walking the streets for sale, for labor, or for sex. And so we're seeing this happen online. Now, a lot of parents will ask me, is this happening on the dark web? And I say, no, this is happening on the regular web. And that is how the parents of the girl who was taken from the Dallas Mavericks game were able to find her. They found her for sale online. And you might think, like I did when I first heard about this, like, there is no way this can happen. There's no way this can be legal. But traffickers are very smart, and they are constantly finding ways to stay a step ahead of law enforcement. So for example, they may use emojis to sell people online. Well, it's very difficult to prosecute someone in a court of law and to declare their intent over what was the meaning of an emoji, and that's how that happens. Another concern that I have is that social media messaging is moving to encrypted platforms, which means that the social media companies will no longer see any of the messaging, which is for privacy purposes, but we anticipate that this means exploitation will go up while, of course, reporting goes down. And so those are some of the things that we're seeing. Now, let me back up here and just kind of give you an example of how this happens and share with you some of the stories of people that I have met or patients that I have worked with, because what we are afraid of is being kidnapped off the street. But what usually happens is meeting someone in person or online. The first person I'll tell you about is an advocate that I've worked with before named Holly. Now, Holly grew up in Truckerton, New Jersey, and she was what she calls a pretty normal kid. Her home life wasn't great, but she knew kids who had it worse, and she just basically always felt a little less than. She did not feel like her clothes were as nice as her friends. She wasn't as witty. She wasn't as pretty. She wasn't as popular. And she just kind of had a generally bad self-esteem and engaged in some risk-taking behaviors, but not really terrible ones. And one day she was walking through the mall and she saw her recruiter. Now, a recruiter is someone who goes out and seeks out vulnerability. All children have vulnerability, so they're just looking for that moment to catch them in a vulnerable spot. And that's what this recruiter did with Holly. Now, she said recruiters, it's important to know, they don't look scary. They actually look attractive. They look inviting. They look like they have a lot of money and a lot of fun, and they're not scary to go with. And this recruiter just crooked his finger over at Holly, wrote his phone number on her hand, and began talking with her over 2 weeks until she finally agreed to meet him. I'll tell you what happened after that, and again, tell you what you can look for and how you can keep your kids safe when we come back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome back to a lot of a serious Friday. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and we have been talking about what this looks like in the lives of our kids and how we can keep them safe. So now is a good time to adjust your listening audience as we, as parents and grandparents and other people who are invested in the lives and safety of children, to adjust your listening audience and make sure that you know that there's some tough things coming ahead. So I was telling you before the break a story about Holly, and she talked to this trafficker over a period of weeks, and after a while, she agreed to meet him in Atlantic City. Now, in her mind, she was 14, by the way. She thought they were going clubbing, but by that night, she was on the streets and for sale. Now, she was arrested out of her trafficking experience, and she recounts going to the hospital and saying, you know, that the nurses were nice, but didn't really know what to do with her, and she certainly did not feel like a victim. If she was a victim of anything, she felt like a victim of her own choices, that she had made this choice to go, to talk with this person, and to do the actions that had brought her to this moment. And that was really hard. And so people would ask her, why didn't you run away? Why didn't you fight? Why didn't you scream? Why didn't you try to call your parents? And she would say, well, you know, I didn't know what my parents would say. I thought I would get in trouble. I didn't know where I was. I was scared. I didn't have any money. And finally, she said one day a light bulb came on, and she said, I didn't do those things because I was 14. And I can't be expected to know what to do in that kind of situation. And so parents, this is the hard truth, is that our children can be targeted by those who are seeking vulnerability. I've worked with a lot of kids who have just met someone online who seems really nice, who's a friend of a friend of a friend, who has vicarious credibility. And it's really shocking how fast the traffickers can ingratiate themselves into your kids' social circles. And they think that they know them and they don't. And the truth is that traffickers can be teachers. They can be military veterans. They can be diplomats. They can be pastors or spiritual leaders. Those things do happen. And that's something that we have to be aware of, that we are susceptible to deception from traffickers. Now, it may be hard to believe, but there are more people being trafficked at this point in human history than at any point before. And we know that one victim can make a trafficker up to $300,000 a year in income. Those are estimates from law enforcement. And I want you to think about $300,000 a year. I'll go out on a limb and say that most people listening were not at that income level, and yet you still work, you still have a job, you still went for your education or did something to prepare yourself to be able to make a living. This is the mindset of traffickers. They know the financial payoff is so great that they are willing to invest time in that grooming process, whether it takes months or even a year or years to be able to create a trauma bond. Now, what they do is they start to isolate that person from their family, from their support system. They may tell them if they're looking for someone having conflict with their parents or having trouble in a social situation or being involved in juvenile justice or the foster care system, just any vulnerability that they can exploit, and they start to create a relationship there that isolates them from their friends and family and support system. And then they start to question their reality and think, well, this person really loves me. This person really cares about me. It may be the first time that they have felt really seen or appreciated. They may be given lavish gifts, and this can be hard. So signs to watch for are kids who have more than one cell phone, kids who have time that's unaccounted for, kids who have friends that you don't know, or kids who are showing up with lavish or expensive gifts, or spending time with people who just don't seem to have their best interest at heart. Those can all be warning signs of trafficking. And what they'll do sometimes is they don't even know that they're being trafficked. I'll give you another example, a case study from my own personal practice. I was caring for a teenage girl who had come in after an unsuccessful suicide attempt. Now, this girl had a lot of problems. She had a positive drug screen, which means that she was using a lot of different kinds of drugs. She had some self-harming behaviors where she was harming herself and engaging in cutting. She had dropped out of school. By this point, she had a couple of criminal convictions, and she had been in and out of jail. And when I saw her, I knew that she was troubled, and my heart broke for her. But if I had asked her, well, you know, you have these red flags for trafficking, is someone trafficking you? She would not have known what that means. But what she did tell me was that her father was the best person in her life, that he knew that she had a problem with drugs, but he still let her live with him. And he knew that she had been arrested for shoplifting, but he was there to bail her out. And he loved her, even though it was her fault that her parents got divorced, is what she told me. And he still loved her anyway. And all she had to do was sleep with his friends to make money for rent. She did not view that as an abusive situation. She viewed that as her benefactor. Now, parents, those are the really hard truths of how sometimes these things can happen, whether that is a romantic situation or what appears to be a friend. That can be really, really scary. And that's why it's really important to make sure that our kids are safe online. Of course, we want them to be safe on the street. We want them to watch their surroundings surroundings. We want them to drive safely. We want them to know what to do if they see someone who's scary, and we want them to be confident in protecting themselves. But they, a lot of times, are not aware of the dangers to them online. So there are some very simple things that you can do. And this is one of the most common questions that I get is, what can I do to make my child feel safe online? Now, some of the questions I get from parents are about social media. And parents, a lot of times when I start talking about social media, you may think, well, my child doesn't have that, so thank goodness I don't have to worry about that. But I get calls and emails and messages and people approaching me at speaking engagements telling me their children do not have social media, and yet they did. They did somehow, whether it was a secret or whether it was kept on a friend's account, because kids cannot rationalize through that danger. It's not that they're trying to deceive you. It's just they really truly think that you don't understand and that it's not as dangerous as you think it is, because kids are developmentally wired to feel invincible. And so they may not recognize the dangers online. So even if your kid doesn't have a phone, even if they don't have social media, you still should have conversations with them about safe and responsible phone usage, because the likelihood is that even if they don't have those things, their friends do. And they can be a powerful voice of influence and a voice of alerting to danger in those kinds of situations. So let me walk you through some things that you can do to keep your kids safe online. First of all, delay social media as long as possible. Honestly, if they're not on social media, then the risk is significantly lowered from being trafficked through social media engagement and through meeting people online. Now, this can be hard to do, but the minimum age is 13. It shouldn't even be a conversation until 13 years of age. That is the age set by the Children's Online Privacy Law. That is federal law. And I talk to a lot of parents who will say, yeah, I know my kid is not 13, but I watch it really closely and my kid is really responsible. And those two things may be really true. But kids are also kids, and they are vulnerable, and they can experience abuse and violence and bullying and all kinds of other negative things online. And if you've checked that box saying they're 13 when they're not, what you've done is potentially void any legal protection available to you should something happen. And what the online platform will say is, you violated our terms of use, we don't have to help you. And in fact, we could prosecute you. Now, I don't think that they would do that, but you certainly do lose out on those availabilities of services and resources. The next thing that you should do is, when they are ready for online presence, which I do give a lot of indicators about the brain science of that in my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide for Parents and Teens to Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. And if they are ready and they do have social media, the first thing that they should do, the very first thing, is set their account to private. This is such a simple thing to do, but as I've started talking to teens in my clinical practice and ask them, what do you do to protect your privacy online, or is your account set to private? They look at me like I have two heads, because social media by its very nature is not private to them. But most social media platforms default to public settings, so making sure that that is locked down and that it's private. Only about 60% of kids use privacy settings on their social media. So this is another way to just protect your child by leaps and bounds, because there are traffickers who pay recruiters to sit online all day and look for public profiles of children who have vulnerabilities. And once they see this public profile, it's very easy to craft a story from what they're saying. You know, if they're experiencing, I'll give you an example of one that happened in a case that I am personally aware of, was a girl who was going to be a collegiate athlete going through a breakup on social media that was pretty ugly, and people were taking sides. And there was one person who was extraordinarily nice, who counteracted very carefully and very methodically all of those negative things that other people were saying. And this person was a trafficker. So having a private profile is really important. The third thing I would recommend that you do is have your children use a profile photo that is not their face, that does not make it obvious that they are a minor. So they shouldn't be identified. This should be a beach or a puppy or a geometric pattern or some other photo that does not clearly identify your child as a minor. Just doing those three things will give your child significant protection online. The next thing that you can do and starting to, you know, go down and be even more specific and to provide more layers of protection is the conversations that surround their social media use. One of the most common questions I get is, what software do I recommend for phone monitoring or social media monitoring? And I'll tell you, there are a lot of good options out there. But monitoring software is simply a tool, and it does not replace intentional conversation or relational connection. So if it's used in the absence of that, kids are smarter than parents. I had one parent ask me, showed me her son's social media profile and said he had about 7,000 friends, but had never made a post. And how could this be? And that's when I had to gently introduce her, as I'm learning myself and have been on the receiving end of some of these learning curves and opportunities, that she had in fact been blocked by her son and didn't know that he in fact was posting. And kids will always outsmart us on tech. They will always know more than we can know on tech. And so that cannot be a singular solution. It can be a safety guardrail. It can be a protection, a fence, a gate, something that buys time, but it cannot be the only strategy. So talking regularly about their activities online is really important. Asking them, how safe do you feel online? How do you feel about your safety online? Where are places that you feel uncomfortable or that you're not sure about? Making sure they're equipped to see what they're going to see and that they know what to do if they see a friend who is in trouble. The next thing that I would recommend as an added advanced layer of protection is disabling geotagging on photos. Now, if your child has an iPhone, when they take a photo, it takes a latitude, a longitude, an altitude, a timestamp, and puts that into the metadata of this photo. If that photo is published publicly, now here's something to think about. You may think my child doesn't post that, but someone else's child posts or someone else posts a photo of your child. That metadata can be extracted and can be used to create a map to see where does your child go? Who do they hang out with? What is their timing there? And those are some scary things. And it's really easy to go into the settings of your iPhone, the settings of your photos, and to disable that geotagging. Those things can be really important. But really, parents, nothing replaces the value of honest communication. So set the boundaries yourself. One of the boundaries that I have is don't friend someone online that you don't know in real life. These are important things to talk about and they may not understand. So be willing to talk about it again and again and again. And again, parents, you don't have to share all the nitty-gritty details of everything there in order for them to feel safe. You can share just enough information to start the conversation. Again, if you want to go to unboundnow.org, you can go to that Learn tab and get some online training, learn more about this, and we'll be talking more about it in the month to come. Join us on Monday where we debut our next habit for healthy parenting. I'll see you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.